Good evening and welcome. Welcome to Bright Now Radio. And I'm your host, Sonia Grayson Newman, and I welcome you to another week here with me. And I'm so glad to have you here. What's been happening with me? This week's been pretty quiet, really. I've just been doing a bit of this, bit of that. I went to see the fabulous Gabrielle Bernstein on Monday evening. And if you don't know who she is, Google her. She's really, really interesting. She's one of my go-to people who I go to for my inspiration and my information on all things spirituality, meditation, kundalini yoga, and so forth. She's young, she's energetic, and she has so much to offer. She's a real light and inspiration in the world. So she was speaking here in London. She actually's from the States. And she was speaking here in London, and it was the third or fourth time I've actually gone to one of her talks, and that was really nice. I actually took Tony with me as well, and he loved it. And it was nice to meet her and have a chat, and she actually remembered me as well, which is good. One, from social media, and two, from meeting her at previous lectures. She's actually speaking here on Saturday. She's got a full-day workshop. So if you're interested, I think it might be sold out already, but if you know of her or are interested in actually getting on her workshop, then go along to Google and check her out, and maybe you can get a spot on her workshop. So who do we have here with us today? Today we have somebody who's going to talk about a very, very interesting topic. It's a topic that is very, how should I say, very dear to our hearts. It's a topic that we will, at some point, most of us come across. And it was interesting to know, how do we actually deal with this? And the topic we're going to be talking about is grief and grieving. When we lose somebody that is very special and dear to us, how do we cope? What is expected of us? What do people say? How do people bring comfort to us at that time? And how do we heal? You know, how do we heal from grief? Can you heal from grief? Well, Christy is on the line, and she is here with us all the way from Australia. And I'm so excited to have her on the show tonight, because she is the, I know we've had guests from the States before, but this is the first time we've had somebody from Australia. So, Christy, hello. Should I say good
Hi.
Evening? Should I say good morning?
it's good morning here at the moment. We're in, you know, I'm not an Australian, I'm a Kiwi, but I've lived in the UK a long time, but have found myself over here at the minute. So, yes, 7
yes.
o'clock in the morning.
Wow.
It is at the moment, bright and early.
Okay. So thank you for joining us. Thank you for accepting the invitation to join us this evening at, well,
thank
evening
you
here,
me.
First thing morning for you.
Yes.
And what's the weather like there at the moment?
You're in London, aren't you? Are you sure you want to know?
Yeah, please. It was
right now, if I have a look right now, it's 18 degrees. It's going to get up to around 30 today.
Oh,
that sounds like it's lovely. It's really lovely.
In saying that, I checked the weather forecast, and I think they said it's going to be 21 degrees over the weekend or on Friday here.
Oh,
it's
nice.
Going to be it's going to be the warmest Halloween for a long time or ever. So, looking forward
lovely.
To that. Yes. Yes, we've had a few good days, and this evening it was like it's rainy and it was dark, and yes, and I'm looking forward to 21 degrees.
That'll be nice.
Yes. So, Christy, tell us about what you do, and tell us what you'll be sharing with us. I'm going to keep saying this evening. I'm sorry. I'm so used to saying this evening. But I know for you over there, it's morning. So, yes, what will you be sharing with us?
To explain a bit about what I do, I'm a grief specialist. So I work with people who've had a death in their lives and who want to heal from it,
okay.
who want to positively change the experience. So, you know, to get to a place where they can think about and talk about and love someone who has died in their life without that being a painful thing at all.
Mm-hmm.
And that's what I do, take them through a process to get them there.
Right, okay. And how did you come about starting this work? How did you come to be a grief specialist?
Okay, well, I think as with most people that find their way into the grief and death field, it's often through deaths in our own lives. Mm. And it was about 9 years ago now. I was actually living in Australia at the time. And my father died very suddenly, but it wasn't just his death. Within 4 months, we'd had 6 deaths, and
wow.
And his was the first. And then it was just bang, bang. Every few weeks, there was another death in the family from all sorts of causes. And this, as I said, went on for about 4 months, which was pretty insane. And at the time, I worked in mental health, and so I was kind of well-versed in what over here we call psychologists, over you always psychotherapists, you know, what they get up to and counseling and things like that. So that was my go-to, and I really, really struggled through that first bit of time. And I kind of, you know, I tried all sorts of therapies I could think of, conventional, unconventional, just I didn't understand at the time, but when I look back now, I realize I was just looking for help, and I was looking for help beyond, you know, the conventional methods of help, just counseling and things like that. And went off and did a year of travel, which was quite horrific in some ways, thinking that would be the answer, you know, remove myself from the situation, go and do something different. And then I got to the UK, and I started studying psychotherapy. I wanted to be a psychotherapist. And what I know now is that something in me was really driving me on to find more. I just, you know, something in me knew there has to be something better than coping with grief and managing grief and just, you know, begrudging acceptance of this death. It's, you know, it's not really a suitable legacy for someone you love that a family is left in bits. So something in me obviously drove me on looking for more, and I found my way in London into spirituality and personal development and processes of change. And, you know, some of the work, the likes of what you talk about, Gabby Bernstein, they, you know, potential things we'd, you know, I never understood before. And I did some training and some studies, and I got to a point where that I'd been told was impossible, which is where I'd healed completely. And this is, ironically, people sometimes still try to explain to me that that's impossible, albeit very patiently and politely. But that's precisely where I got to. There was no more pain. There was none at all. There was nothing left around these deaths. They were important and beautiful events in my life, and I wouldn't do anything to have changed them. And it was just such a radical change from the norm. And so from there, I got into general coaching, and eventually admitted to myself that working around death and grief was where my heart lay. It's what made the most sense to me, and started doing purely that, and developed my own process. So my grief process that I take people through is one of my own design. Now, yeah, so that's kind of it in a nutshell.
Wow, that's amazing. I mean, to have so many deaths within your circle, within your family, within a short space of time, I've not heard of anything like that before. So, you know, that must have been difficult, but you managed to work through it. And as you said, you did a lot of that work yourself, basically on your own, really.
I suppose yes and no. So probably where things really started shifting for me was when I found Dr. John DeMartini. I'm sure you've probably heard of John DeMartini.
Yes, I have.
And I used to be a facilitator of his work, and I, you know, his work absolutely changed my life. And going into his work was where the healing happened, but what I worked out eventually was that he has a process he takes people through for death. Mm. And I actually had never taken myself through his process, and I realized that what I'd done is within the bubble of his work, within the bubble of his teaching and the principles and the way to look at life that I'd learned, I'd taken what I had learned through his work, and I guess for months, I think I probably applied it almost obsessively. My little mind was just running around every corner of these deaths in my life, every element of them, everything that went on for me, for my dad, for my mum, for my brother. until I had seen it all completely different way. So I suppose yes and no, I was, you know, it was within that environment that I learned the tools that started me on this journey. But I think where I took them was, you know, pretty much what happened in my own little head.
So tell me, I mean, through your work and what you do,
yes,
I mean, why do so many people struggle with the grieving process? Why is it such, it's almost like we don't know, it's one of those things where you don't know how you will cope, you don't know what to expect, it's hard to prepare, I think. It might be hard. I mean, you'll share your thoughts on that. But you almost don't know how you will actually deal with a death or of a loved one.
Absolutely. So, how to deal with why people struggle with the grieving process. So, if I'm clear first on what the grieving process means to me, I'm not talking about stages of grief or coming to acceptance. For me, a grieving process begins with whatever you're going through around a death. And again, I think part of the issue is we've been told to expect certain emotions, which is, you know, you can feel anything all along the spectrum initially. Not just, people imagine it's pain and agony, but a lot of people can go through numbness or actually not having huge feelings. Or you get the other extreme. Some people can have experiences of love or euphoria even, but you're not going to hear about those because it's not as socially acceptable, so it's generally not shared. But there really are, there's not a single emotion that could not come up through that. So when I talk about the grieving process, I'm talking about going from whatever you start with to a place of healing. And the reason people struggle, a couple of the reasons why people struggle so much, I think, when death comes to them, is one that we live now in a really death-denying and death-fearing society. You know, the fact that death is considered morbid, it's a topic people don't want to talk about. And when you think about that, it's ludicrous. It absolutely is ludicrous. It's like a woman getting pregnant and not wanting to think about giving birth and refusing to face it and hoping it'll go away. It's not going to go away.
Yeah.
And so part of the problem is we've so blocked it out of our awareness, we so expect it really not to come, that we're in, you know, utter shock, disbelief that it was ever going to come to us, except for at 95 years of age. So that's part of the issue, I think. I find when people are far more death aware, you know, they think a lot more about if this was the last year or if something happened to someone they loved, rather than, you know, being in denial, because it can be, a huge shock when you have never once considered that a person could die, and they do. So that, you know, obviously can be very difficult. The next part, I think, is a lot of what we've been taught about grief is not very useful. Generally, the social beliefs are at best not very helpful, at worst pretty harmful. And so we've been told that, you know, that grief is how we honor them, that grief is love. There can be great belief that, you know, that grief is connection, that grief is how we remember them, that you cannot get over grief, that you cannot heal, that you will always be in pain. And when people, I mean, again, if we step, sometimes we need to step outside the region of grief and death to be able to look at these things, to look in something more practical. When you look at, you know, when you talk about Gabby Bernstein, and when we look at business, when we look at fitness and health now, we understand the absolute power of your beliefs to create your reality and create your experience.
Yeah, yeah.
But often when it comes to grief, we don't apply that same wisdom, but it absolutely does apply. So if people come into grief now believing that they can't ever leave it, believing they're not supposed to heal from it, believing that it's you know, if they believe on any level that their grief is actually love or connection, there'll be a strong motive not to give it up. So a lot of the reason why people get very stuck is these beliefs, these very strongly held societal beliefs, at least, you know, at least in the Western society that we operate.
Because when someone loses somebody that's close to them, and you know, we hear certain terminology. So you might hear somebody say, oh, don't worry, they've gone to a better place, or at least the suffering is over, or God has a greater plan for them, or you'll be okay, it just takes time, or something like, you know, death comes to all of us. And I've always wondered, you know, when somebody is grieving, and sometimes when you're speaking to that person, you're not really sure what to say. And it's exactly what you said. It's the cultural and societal way in which we're taught about death that you almost, you're not sure what to say. You know, you might say a few words like, I'm sorry for your loss, or, you know, one of these things that I've just listed, but you're not really sure how that's going to be received, or if we might offend, or if we might say in something that makes them feel worse. You know, like say, oh, they've gone to a better place, you know, and the person might think, well, being with me is, you know, as far as they're concerned, being with me was the better place. Now they've gone to somewhere of the unknown, and it's just words, you know, and they're missing the person, they're in love, they love the person, and it's just, I'd imagine, a time of confusion and conflicting emotions and thoughts. But has anybody ever in your work ever said how they feel when these sort of terms are used? And I know it's very an individual thing, but has that ever come up in your practice or speaking to people?
It certainly does come up. The whole topic of how people react to you after a death, what to say to someone who's had a death, when you're the person who's had the death, what people are going to say to you is a pretty busy topic, and it's a highly emotive topic. People actually get very passionate about this topic, and it's incredibly difficult because, as you say, people don't know what to say. And one part of that is, again, we live in this space of death denial and death fear, and often, you know, somebody, when somebody's had a death in their life, if you've had a death in your life, you become a memento mori, you become a walking reminder to others of death, and that's very challenging at a deep level. And you know, people have, you know, we hardly know, as you say, people get stuck in grief, they struggle with grief. We hardly know what to do with ourselves.
Yeah.
Yet sometimes we'll have expectations that everybody else should know what to do and should behave the way we want, but they have no idea what to do and say either. So that's part of the problem. Of course, people just don't know what the right thing is to say. And of course, the next part is that there is no right thing to say. So there's lots, you know, people, it's a question I see come through to my website quite a lot through Google search. You know, what's the right thing to say? What are the right words? And there are lots of articles written on that. But I think the problem is we are also individual. So your example is they've gone to a better place. You know, you'll meet one person who'll go, if one more person says that to me, I'm going to punch them in the head. Yeah. What a stupid thing to say. And yet somebody else might say, no, that, you know, I find that really comforting because that's my belief.
Yeah.
No, I've had all the things that someone might say, well, this is a safe thing to say. I've come across someone who says, I hate hearing that. So it's about understanding that the best you can do is say something that's true to you. You know, people do turn to these stock standard phrases just because we have no idea what to say. But say, if you feel sorry, say sorry. If you want to offer your help, then offer your help. But also be aware that you're not in control of how that lands. You know, I have somebody that that when her husband died, someone would say to her they were sorry that she lost her husband, and that would infuriate her because the fact they were using the word lost was a suggestion that she did it. Now, you can't know that. Each person is so different. One person I met who people would ask, how are you? And that would make her, on some days, that would really upset her that people would ask her what she saw as a stupid question. Other days it was fine. So that the issue is that there is no right and wrong. All you can do is say what feels right to you. And like I said, you know, understand it's not completely up to you. You know, you are not responsible for how that lands. It might not land how you mean. There's nothing you can do about that. Yeah. More importantly, I think, is for the people on the other side, those who are grieving, those who have had the death, it can make them so angry and so upset and feel so let down and so disappointed and sometimes feel unloved from the way people react. The really, because it's taken personally, you know, we're told all this stuff about your real friends will be there for you. And so straight away people start going, oh, look, apparently I barely have any real friends. Apparently these people don't even love me at all. You know, some of these people that are saying silly things or are not contacting me. And the important thing, it can be a bitter pill to swallow, but once you get your head around it, it changes everything, is to understand that people's reactions to you around a death will not tell you anything about how they feel about you, but it'll tell you everything about how they feel about death.
Yes, yes, I can imagine.
So the person on the receiving end, to understand that when someone goes weird, when someone says something utterly bizarre, when someone leaves the room, when someone starts, you know, a strange conversation or makes what you think is a terrible joke, or someone can't even call you, this is all what their reaction to death is.
Mm-hmm.
And the minute the one of the blessings for me having so many family members die once was I got to see this unfold. I worked in a big office, and you know, my dad died, and I started to notice some of my friends that it all seemed a bit strange. And then, of course, I had death after death. You know, you become pretty scary to everyone else when you just seem to carry death wherever you go, you know.
Mm-hmm.
And I got to see people step further and further away from me. And eventually I got to a point where I thought either I'm a terrible judge of character and nobody actually likes me, or maybe this is not about me, because I got to watch it happen in such an extreme circumstance. I really got to understand that.
Okay, now that's very interesting, because, you know, I've always picked up sometimes people don't know what to say, and I thought I'd ask you that question, and with, you know, people not sure how it's going to be received, and they're a bit wary of saying the wrong thing at such a sensitive time, and also it's, you know, it's around that issue around you'll be okay, it takes time, you know, that all you do is maybe wait and you'll start feeling better, but maybe there's other things that you need to do to get you through, and I'm sure you'll explain that in a while. But what are the common feelings and emotions associated with grieving, you know, such as guilt and anger and, you know, even sometimes forgiveness or unforgiveness for the person who's died? I mean, does these things come up when people feel that, you know, they're grieving but they've got all these emotions as well? How do they deal with everything, or is it very common that there is a mix of emotions that come up, or is there typical emotions that come up?
No. Part of the issue is we've been told with, through models like the five stages, which, you know, for anyone that wants to go on a healing journey, don't go anywhere near it. It's a very old model, thoroughly debunked and not of any use at all for anyone that wants to really go through their experience and come out in a healing place. Things like that have said, well, here's the few emotions. Here's the ones you'll feel. And for those who are in grief, they know, my God, you can be overwhelmed with all sorts of emotions. As I said earlier, you can feel anything on the spectrum from extreme agony to joy and love and peace and everything in between. And we're not, you know, we're complicated creatures in our emotions. We do not feel typically one emotion at a time. And what happens with something like death? Death is an incredibly powerful experience. And I was just writing about this a couple of weeks ago as well, that it doesn't just bring up everything for us around the person that died. And of course, that can bring up all sorts of feelings there. As you say, there can be guilt, there can be anger, there can be missing, there can be pain, there can be fear, there can be relief, there can be all sorts of emotions, there can be numbness. But, you know, we don't live our lives in these tidy little boxes where no experience touches any other experience. So when we go through a really powerful experience of any kind, but particularly, obviously, in this situation, a death going through grief, any cracks you already have in yourself, it'll turn them into canyons.
Oh.
So people who have had any depression issues, anxiety issues, any self-worth, self-love, self-esteem issues, these, in this situation, can be opened up wide. So what you can have is people going through, you know, not just stuff that's directly around the person who died and their feelings around that, but their own issues brought right out into the open, you know, the dam can break. And so, you know, what I find is when I work with someone, we really start with a good foundation of self-care and self-love. It's so important. I've really found you really can't get anywhere without starting with that. And for people who are wanting to know to kind of cope at the beginning of their journey, that's absolutely what they need to be doing. And what I'll find with a lot of people is there's not a lot of self-love going on, but they never realized it before.
Mm.
And it's only now in this space where they're raw, where they're naked, that a lot of this can come out, some of their, you know, deeper feelings, some of their deeper fears. Because anytime you're stripped bare, I think anytime you're vulnerable, a lot of the deep stuff you're carrying can make its way to the surface. Mm. So, you know, what people go through is very complicated and very unique to each person.
Mm-hmm.
If that makes sense.
Interesting. No, it's interesting you say that because self-love comes up all the time in the work that I do and comes up a lot on this radio show as well.
Yeah.
And it's interesting. I never thought of it in this instance.
Mm.
You know, again, we're so, uneducated or inexperienced or not sure what to do around death. I didn't think about self-love and what its role is in this process. So I'm so glad you've mentioned that.
Mm.
And the fact that whatever is going on with somebody can just be exacerbated whilst they're going through the grieving process.
Absolutely.
Really, really, really interesting.
Mm.
Really, really interesting. So tell me, explain to me about grief in the way that you define it and what you do. And just before you do that, I just want to remind the listeners that you can post questions. We've got the Q&A box there if you're online. And also, if you're on the telephone, if you want to press *2 on your handset, I'll be able to see you there and can invite you on to ask a question. This would be a great opportunity to ask Christy any questions you have on this very sensitive topic. So, yes, Christy, so tell us about grief, how you see it, and I know you've got an acronym, and explain how your work differs.
Okay, well, as you've seen, Sonia, when I talk about being a grief specialist, I actually use the acronym GRIEF, and what that means is I'll explain why I came up with that, actually, because, you know, my grief started off like anyone, like a lot of other people's can. I went through a couple of years of hell, really, wandering around, trying to figure myself out. But obviously I chose to go on a very different journey, and I worked very hard and I was very committed, and I worked my butt off to get to this place of social healing. And what I found after that is when I would talk to people about grief, the way they defined grief and the way I explained my journey were not the same. You know, they all started the same, but then when I would talk about grief, people would go, oh God, you poor thing. They couldn't hear in that the potential. And so I talk now about, for me, a grief journey is a journey from pain and loss to, and here's the acronym, to gratitude, real connection, inspiration, empowerment, and freedom from pain, total freedom from pain around the death. To me, that is the end of the journey. Anything other is just, you know, partway along or stuck partway along. Yeah, so
Could you repeat that? Let me just give us a chance to write that down.
Sure.
So it's gratitude.
Gratitude, real connection. And what I mean by that is people say, oh, I know they're with me. Oh, I feel them in my heart. And in most cases, that's not the case. You know, people are feeling a dreadful sense of disconnection. The last thing they're feeling is this person actually truly connected to them. So grief, gratitude, real connection, inspiration. And then inspiration from what you've been through, being able to see the beauty and meaning in you know, every element of your life, including this.
Okay.
Seeing that it's not out of place, it's not wrong. Empowerment, being able to use this and understand how it adds to your life, how it makes you more of who you are, and freedom from pain.
Freedom.
To me, this is the outcome possible for everybody who wants it. And that's for me, that's what the journey is really all about.
And it is a journey because I'm sure most people, when they're faced with a death, feel far removed from probably all of these.
Absolutely.
Yeah, so it's a real journey.
And I often use, like I said earlier, sometimes it's useful to step away from the analogy of death simply because people will go, that's ridiculous. Of course I can't feel gratitude. Of course I can't be free from pain. Without realizing that it's like if you want to get fit and healthy or you want to build a business, you know, from where you are when you begin, of course that's nothing close to your experience. You have a journey to go on to get to your outcome that is entirely different from where you are at the beginning. So it's important to kind of be able to see it in a practical way and understand that.
Right, okay. That's quite deep, actually, all of those pieces of the acronym. It's on their own, you know, very, very deep, but put them all together, it's phenomenal for you to go through that process. I'm really interested about that. So is it a five-step process? Do you take them through one by one, or is it a case that you look at it in its totality and just work through the process with them?
So for my grief process, it's a 9-step process. We start beforehand with some work around self-care and self-love, and I actually have a little wee video course on my site that's around that. But we do that first, and then we launch into the 9-step program. There's other people I know as well who do amazing. I talk about us being the free from grief industry, which is quite different from the regular grief industry. And I do know two or three others who also do similar healing work. Profound healing work around grief, and their processes are completely different from mine. How they work is totally different, but this is the way I work. So it is it's a 9-step process. I work with people one to one, and we go methodically and thoroughly through each step, and we complete each step very, very carefully and very thoroughly before we move on to the next.
Oh, okay, now that's good. So in terms of time frame. That I guess I'm just presuming, there's a presumption, that there is no time frame for grieving. I might be wrong. And grieving, the grieving process is going to be different for each individual as well as different within different cultures.
Mm-hmm.
No, that's just it. I'm just making a statement. Is that the case?
Okay. Yes and no, I suppose. And I suppose it depends, again, coming back to what we mean when we're talking about grieving.
Mm-hmm.
The issue is we often say that, it just, you know, it takes time or it's different for everyone. But we're not really on a healing path, so things don't change, and that's why people can be stuck forever. Again, if I come back to the analogy of fitness, it's like, is there a time frame on getting fit? Well, no, it can, you know, one person can take a very long time, or it can be a few years or a few months if they're really dedicated to it. But if they're actually not doing anything to get fit, then that's probably never going to profoundly change. So it's a bit the same with grief. If people are really, you know, stuck in common beliefs and not really doing anything to go on a healing journey, then, you know, we're not really going to have any massive changes. Typically, this is why for most people grief just gets buried, and this is where the idea that you can't do anything about it comes from. In terms of the healing work, I know, for example, when I work with someone, it absolutely depends on the individual. I tend to work with people for often 3-4 months, but it can be a little bit shorter depending on what they want, how they work, can be a lot longer. You know, some people will come to me within a month or two of a death, and for some it's years and years and years. You know, in some cases it's been like 30 years later when they finally realize this is not going to go anywhere, that the time isn't actually going to do anything for them.
Right, okay.
Yeah, so it's kind of a complicated answer. Does that answer the question?
No, it does answer. And in fact, you've answered another question there. It was like, how do we know that we need to get help? You know, what stage would we... You just mentioned somebody coming to you after 30 years... Which is a long time. Mm. How does one know that they need some support and some help around this?
So again, for me, all I can talk about is the healing journey. Somebody wants to go on the healing journey. At present, I mean, for most people, they're not going to know how to do that on their own. I wish it were easier, but the you know, social beliefs and what society will tell you is so incredibly strong that to go against the grain of that and figure it out on your own is incredibly tough. I would always advise find somebody that you resonate with. And, you know, that means either go and work. That doesn't have to be me. There are, you know, a couple of other people I can recommend. Obviously, some will resonate with me, some won't. And mm-hmm. you go and read those people's books or follow their blogs, or if you want to, go in and work with them. But right. find, make sure it's someone who has healed themselves. Someone who has not healed themselves and doesn't believe it's possible cannot guide you to
right.
total healing. So, yeah, I would love to imagine a time in the future where people can make that journey on their own. That would be amazing. But I think at this point, for most people, that's, you know, it makes sense to find somebody who's done that journey before and see how they did it and what they have to share.
Right, okay. And can I just ask you a quick question? Mm-hmm. Do you have people that come to you when they have a loved one who's terminally ill and they come to you to help them prepare for their loved one's death?
It hasn't happened yet. So my work
okay.
to date has just been after
okay.
a death.
Okay.
If I do move into another area, that would likely be it.
Okay. Okay.
Yeah.
No, that's I was just wondering if you did that. Okay. So have you got any top tips about, you know, how people can cope with grief? I know you shared some already, but
mm-hmm.
have you got any, say, top tips that you'd like to share with us?
Okay, so I'm gonna give a couple of different bits of what will sound like contradictory advice, but I'll start by saying when you're initially going through whatever you're going through, I cannot overestimate the importance of self-care and self-love.
Mm-hmm.
It's the kind of thing where people go, well, what difference is it going to make if I do something nice to myself each day? It's not going to change anything. But it makes things far worse. If you're not looking after your body, if you're not looking after your soul, you've got no ground under your feet. It makes things far worse. So, you know, I've learned the hard way over many things over the year and being in many, many very, very challenging spaces that when things are at their worst, when the proverbial hits the fan, that is what to come back to. The absolute basics of self-care and self-love that really, really need to be a priority.
Mm-hmm.
And further than that, you know, just taking the time to, I recommend for people journaling just to be able to really express what they're going on. Again, just so they can honestly get everything out, because they will be feeling things they did not expect, or not feeling what they thought they would, or feeling things they're ashamed to admit to others. So just a way to be able to express that and acknowledge that to yourself and know that it's okay. It's really important that that repression of that doesn't start, because that can be a big problem. So that, you know, I know those sound very simple, but that's just so, so, so important, doing those things to cope initially. And as I said, I'll give some contradictory advice. Don't accept coping. Don't settle for coping. So coping is fine initially because you're going through something, you know, a huge experience, and it can be very challenging and it can be very traumatic. And for someone, it may be the worst thing they've ever been through.
Mm-hmm.
But in terms of the long run, people just will still talk to me about how do people cope, how do people manage. Don't accept that, you know, you'll get to a place where you heal and get to a place where it's completely, you know, have that be your aim. Don't just look to cope in life with this. Don't just look to begrudgingly accept it and find a way to manage it.
Yeah.
You know, no matter what anybody says about what's possible, you can have a lot more than that.
That's interesting, because I think you're absolutely right. We tend, not just in death, we tend in life to put up, shut up, and try and cope with
mm-hmm.
things rather than deal with them as I use them as a tool for healing.
Mm.
And it is very interesting that you say that, because, you know, it's so common that people are just coping. And it's the language we use as well. They say to people,
yes.
How are you coping? Or she's coping well, or he's coping
mm-hmm.
well. And it's almost like you have to be a martyr and, you know, being British or English, you know, it's a case of, oh, you stiff upper lip and you continue as
mm-hmm.
as normal. But you're right, it's about healing.
It is.
Yeah, and sometimes it's almost like people expect, or you might even expect, to be so down and low and depressed that you are going to stop looking after yourself. You know, you're not going to eat. You're not going to present yourself well. I know that some people, they don't sleep well. I mean, that's something else. But in terms of even not eating properly, not dressing, not washing, and, you know, these are the type of things that you've got to heal yourself through if that's how you're feeling. So it's interesting, that word cope is...
Well, people ask me all the time, well, how is it that you help people cope with grief? And I say, I don't help people cope with grief. Help them heal from grief. It's like saying to a personal trainer, you know, how do you help people be okay with the fact that they're not fit?
Yeah.
They don't. They help them get fit.
No, that's great, because even the title of this show, you know, I've used coping with the grief process. You know, again, it's the language, because so thank you for sharing that, because it is about healing. Coping is just about putting up with it and thinking that's your lot and that's how it's going to be until time allows things to change. But you have the power to change it yourself, and that's such a positive message. And at the time when you're going through the grief, or you've just lost someone, that's probably the furthest thing from you, from your mind. So, you know, how do you, I mean, how, if someone just lost someone, how are they going to, how are they going to know what to do? Because we expect it, generally, you know, we expect to feel the loss, the pain, the hurt, the anguish, the loneliness, the abandonment. You know, this is all the things we've been conditioned to, to feel. Or to, you know, the definitions of what we think you must feel like when you've just lost somebody. How do we start changing that?
Well, the very first, I think, you know, the very first part is to honestly feel whatever you feel. Because some people will feel exactly the words, you know, the emotions that you've just described. Many others will feel different things. And the problem is, from the get-go, we already... have our expectations of what it's meant to be like. Probably the most common email, one of the most common emails I get from people, is people who are not feeling everything they thought they were going to. You know, and they don't tell anybody because they feel like they're a bad person.
Right.
You know, I think that the best example was a woman who wrote to me, and her baby had died, and she wrote to me and said, I haven't cried since the funeral. I don't leave the house. I don't want to talk to everybody because I don't know what to tell them, because... She said, you know, this is meant to be the worst experience of my life, and I'm not in pieces. And what kind of a person am I? You know, we've been really, we've really had our expectations set. So, I mean, I think one of the most important things is just to fully acknowledge whatever you feel and know that it's okay. I mean, I hear the absolute extremes of what people feel, and there is no one way people feel, or five feelings or 10 feelings people feel. And the other thing I think is really important from the get-go is for people to know that they can heal, even if I'm the only person they've heard that from. You know, they may not have come across anyone else. Everyone else may tell them that's impossible, but the belief that you can't heal, and again, you Sonia, with all the work you do and you know, your studies will know, like we talked about earlier, the incredible power of our beliefs. And if you've already decided something is impossible, guess what? It is.
It's going to happen.
So the thing with this, I always say to people, even if I'm the only one that said to you, you can heal, all it takes is one person. You know, when one person had run the four-minute mile, it was no longer considered a physical impossibility. And it didn't make it easy. It didn't mean it automatically everybody could get off their sofas and run a four-minute mile. But it was no longer impossible. And healing from grief is not. So just if people were to tuck in the back of their heads the idea that it is possible to heal, that opens up a world of possibility for them rather than the brick wall that is impossibility.
No, that's great. And something else I'd like to ask you is people who've lost someone through suicide. how does what sort of emotions are common with that, or is the process that you work with them slightly different, or does it conjure up a lot of different emotions? I would imagine it would. I know on your website you've written a blog about the Robin Williams suicide.
Mm.
And I'd like you just, if you can, just share a little bit about your view on that.
Suicide and how that impacts people differently. Again, it's really hard to say how does it impact people differently, because it really depends on the individual. And I have worked with suicides. I have worked with all sorts of deaths, including suicide. There are feelings that can bring up. There can be other elements of feeling guilty or feeling angry at someone. But there's really no way to predict. It's part of the problem with grief, I think, is that we have this hierarchy of grief.
Yeah,
of how much you're allowed to feel. So, you know, the top people believe is if a child dies, that's the worst. But if your pet dies down the bottom, you're not really entitled to feel anything.
Mm-hmm.
And if someone dies by suicide or murder, well, that's right up there.
Mm.
And you're expected and allowed to feel a great deal.
Mm.
But, you know, I've had people who've come to me with what seems like a horrific death. And like I said, I've dealt with suicides and murder even and deaths that would just, you know, stand your hair on end, and be balanced about it, or have emotions they didn't expect. And then, you know, somebody else who had the death of an elderly parent at 95, or the death of a cat, and it's like their world has ended.
Yeah.
They don't know if they can live. So I'm always wary of saying this is what you will experience.
Yeah, of course.
Because there's no way of knowing. It can be what people might expect, or it can be wildly different.
Yeah.
So because it's a suicide, can add a lot more to the mix for some people, or not. It really depends on the individual.
Yeah. Excellent. I think the key thing that you've shared with us today is the fact that you can heal from the grief.
Mm-hmm.
'Cause I think a lot of people feel that it's only just coping and allowing time to be the master, and through time you will feel better, and that might be the case. But there are some things that you can actually do to help you heal, because as you said, also 30 years on, you know, somebody may then decide that they need help, they need support after 30 years, because that healing, with all that time, that healing still hasn't taken place.
Yeah. Well, so I'd like to, if I can, quickly debunk the time healing myth.
Yeah, please.
It is an absolute myth, and it causes a lot of issues. Because time doesn't heal, time just buries. And this is why people coming to me 30 years later, because it hasn't gone anywhere. Typically, for people who kind of feel like, people tell me sometimes, well, it's been a long time and I feel like I've healed. And I'll say, well, do you actually feel better about the death, or do you just not really think about it very often? And they'll typically go, oh, yeah, okay, I haven't thought about that. Often we say time heals just because we don't know what else to do. You know, we would never say this in another area. If someone wanted to get fit, we wouldn't go, we'll just give it time. Or, you know, my business is failing, just give it time. My relationship, you know, I think we might be on the verge of a divorce, we'll just give it time.
Yeah.
It's nothing to do with the time, it's what you do with that time. And so it's a problem people have, this idea. Well, people on the one hand will say time heals, but they don't really believe it. So, you know, if you hear of someone who had what seems like a tragic death in their life 40 years ago, you wouldn't go, 40 years? Oh, you're fine by now, aren't you? Nobody actually expects you to ever be fine.
Yeah.
It's a funny scenario that goes on around that idea of time healing.
Excellent. Okay. Well, what I'm going to do, I'm going to see if there are any questions. I've had a check, and I don't think we have any. So if anyone has a burning question that you haven't asked yet, I urge you to quickly ask it, because we're going to get ready to wrap up. So there's none on the Q&A and none on the phone line. I can see you there, but no one's asking any questions. So whilst they're thinking about any questions, or maybe thinking that they'll contact you directly, or to check out your website and your blogs, can you tell us how we can get hold of you?
Absolutely. So, well, people go to my site. There's a lot of resources on there. There's a lot of blogs, of information.
There is lots.
Yeah, and I also write, you know, I regularly blog, and I'm just kind of messing around getting into doing some videos now. So I'm always up for topics if there's something people specifically want to read about that they haven't seen on there. And there's a free book on there people can sign up to get. And if they don't want to sign up, they can email it to me and I'll send it to them. But my website is ChristyWest.com.
Mm-hmm.
And the email is just Christy@ChristyWest.com if anybody wants to get in touch with me.
Excellent, yeah. Excellent. And then on your website, I can see you've got the links to Facebook and Twitter there as well if people want to follow you via social media. Mm-hmm. I'm going to ask you just a couple of questions.
Sure.
I'm just asking you, what book has inspired you on your journey?
Oh, God. So many, so many.
Actually, it doesn't have to be one. You can give us a couple.
You know, I don't read these days so much personal about my love novel, so I can just lose myself in a good novel any day of the week, and I wish Toni Morrison would write some more books. But in terms of inspiring, I think I haven't read them in quite some time, but any of the Dr. John DeMartini's books.
Mm-hmm.
If people are gonna take a look at his work, or the Gratitude Effect is a nice one to start with, but that's probably been some of the most profound and inspiring reading I did.
Excellent, excellent.
Yeah.
And another question that I ask all the guests that come on the show:
mm-hmm.
What is the must-have item in your handbag?
Must-have item in my handbag would be some form of my Kindle. So either my Kindle, or if I'm in a small bag, then I have the Kindle app on my phone. So I always need access to books at any time.
Oh, excellent. So you're a bookworm.
I am. I've always been a bookworm.
Oh, that's wonderful. That's wonderful. And that's great that you've shared your website. And I would say to everybody to go along, have a look. There are videos on there. There is a free book for you as well. Go have a look at all the blogs. There's interesting topics as well. I found going and looking at the blogs has really helped me understand the whole death process, and helped me as well with some of the preconceptions that I've had around this topic. So please do. Yes. Go and have a look. If you've missed the details, I will be sending it out as always at the end. Probably tomorrow, I'll send out the show recording, and you will have all the details of how you can contact and and just to keep in contact. You know, keep in contact, whether it's Facebook, whether it's Twitter, whether it is Facebook or email. So, yes, that's really important to do that. So, Christy, thank you so much for joining us all the way from Australia.
Well, thank you so much for having me. It's been great.
You're welcome. It's been wonderful speaking to you. It really have helped me understand a lot, actually. And it's wonderful, and it's great, because we can have our own preconceived ideas about things, or not quite sure. And it's when you're faced with an issue of death, that's when you realize sometimes that, you know, you weren't prepared. And I don't know if you ever can be fully prepared, but at least this does give you another understanding of what you can do to heal yourself.
Absolutely.
Yeah. So thank you. Thank you
thank
very
you.
Much. So as I wrap up, I am saying to you, thank you, all of you, for tuning in and being with us this evening. I say this evening, even though it's morning in Australia. But thank you very much for being here. And, yeah, we'll be back here same time next week, and I look forward to you joining us. I'm Sonia Grayson Newman from brightnowcoaching.com, and this is Bright Now Radio. Thank you very much, and take care. Bye for now.
The conference is now completed. Goodbye. Welcome to the conference.